So this week, the Wicked movie comes out. And I think I took my girls to see Wicked the musical, when they were like first grade, kindergarten. We're so excited for the movie. More so, I think, than Thanksgiving itself. We're so excited to see this movie. And so we're listening to the soundtrack again and all of that. And so Defying Gravity is obviously one of the most popular songs in the Wicked soundtrack. In the lyrics, there's a piece that goes, and bear with me because I'm not a good singer. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. And I'm like, those words really resonate for me these past few weeks because of the election. Now, before I get into this, let me tell you, I'm only going to talk about this for about 5 minutes. I had said this in the first episode of Chattitude that this podcast is not about election crap because I hate politics and I will always say that. I hate politics. And what I'm about to talk about, honestly, I don't feel is political. It's more about feeling. I'm only going to get into it for like a few minutes and then we'll talk about some other funner stuff and move on. But I do think it's probably worth having a brief postmortem from a few weeks ago. So we all know what happened, Election Day. And to be honest, I wasn't the slightest bit surprised that Trump won. I actually anticipated it. I am a middle person that lives in a swing state, after all. And I see a lot of things living outside of the Philadelphia area. I am in a blue county. There are several counties that surround Philly. And the one that I'm in is one of the blue ones. But I'm at the edge of it. So it's very purple at the edge of my county. But anyway, my point is that where I live and what I'm exposed to and what we were seeing on TV and the ads and whatnot, I think that all kind of played into my lack of surprise at the outcome. I think what surprised me the most is how I felt afterwards. I was surprised at how sad I was at the thought that people I care about, people that I'm close to, supported him. That made me the most sad. And to this day, I mean, it's only been a couple weeks, I still feel that sadness. It's not about policy. I've said this a million times. I am in the middle. I have Republican and Democrat friends and family. And even a lot of my Republican friends were like, I cannot vote for him. I will support my Republican policies and I will vote Congress. And you did. And look at that. You know, we have a very red Congress. You have the Supreme Court in your corner. Like, you have all the components you need to support the policies that you wanted, but you didn't have to vote for him. And so some of my Republican friends that did realize that, and they said to themselves, like, morally, I cannot support that man. And I thought, okay, that tracks with my values and my morals, and this is why we're close. And I can understand this, you know. But then there are friends of mine and family that still supported him. That is what has made me so sad because I cannot fathom how anyone that I love and am close to could support a twice impeached election denier, morally bankrupt, you know, insurrection starter, Nazi rhetoric spewer, criminal rapist. How? I mean, and I keep asking myself, I'm trying to think, like, what was the line for you? Like, what did he have to do for you not to vote for him? Was there a line? How much more negativity and hate did he have to spew for you not to vote for him? Did he have to punch a baby? What is it? Right? And even if he punched a baby, I guarantee you a bunch of people are like, oh, that was an AI deepfake. He didn't punch a baby. Like, I don't understand. And so I'm certainly not trying to convey that I am about to cancel a lot of people in my life, but I will tell you, I have to take a pause. Like, I don't know. I cannot reconcile this. There are people that I know that voted for him and I'm not close with, and I'm like, well, there's probably a reason we're not close, you know? But for those that I am close to, I'm really struggling. I just feel like you're showing me that we have different values. Like, look at this man. I think about when Bill Clinton was impeached. Oh my God, my Republican friends were so up in arms about Bill Clinton. And character matters. And people would say, who cares what who he sleeps with, right? The country's doing great. No, character matters. Well, Bill Clinton is a kitty cat compared to Trump. But now character doesn't matter, right? So I don't want to get all spun up, but that's just it. It's not trivial. And I need you to understand, I just need a little break. I need a little pause. I need to find a way to reconcile this. I'm not canceling people in my life. I just need time. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about this topic for now. Let's just put this baby to bed. It may get up in an hour and ask for a glass of water, but I'm putting this baby to bed. All right, so let's think of something else to talk about. I mean, maybe I should have ended with that topic because now I'm trying to steady myself. So this kind of plays into everything else I was just saying. Social media has just been on fire, and I guess it always has been to a certain extent, but certainly leading up to the election and after. And everyone's come across this type of person who loves to, like, and someone you don't know. You know, they may be friends of someone you know, or maybe not at all, like none of the above. And people that you don't know, they just love to come in to posts and conversations and just start dropping their knowledge on people. Like, they're so enlightened, right? And they can't help but tell you and explain things to you. And I to tolerate it for me, you know, to keep my composure and not react to people like that, I try to imagine the conversation as if it's happening in real life. I just sort of keep my frustration or temper at bay if I picture it like happening in a coffee shop. Like, think about that. In the real world, would a random stranger walk up to you and just interject themselves in a conversation that you're having with your friend at a table and just like, excuse me, I couldn't help but hear you were talking about democracy, and I just wanted you to know that USA is a constitutional republic. It's not a democracy. So you need to understand that so you do not continue to spread inaccurate information. That I actually saw a conversation like that online. And it's like, dude, what? Who are you? Shut up. And what was the actual conversation was about democracy in principle, not that the USA was a democracy. But by the way, who cares? Why are you go away? I don't understand. What is that gene in people that causes them to be that way? I was not born with that gene. I think there's a difference where you're, you know, having some light banter with your friends and exchange with your friends, but just like coming in hot with a bunch of people you don't know and telling them, you know, how the world works. It's so obnoxious. Oy. I think one of the worst ones for me personally, and actually also funny, we take our dog to this groomer. We've been going to this groomer forever. And the groomer has this really cool shtick where they take pictures of your pet after they groom them and put them in little outfits, depending on what holiday season it is or whatnot. And they put the pet's name in the photo. And you know, our dog, Seamus, which is spelled S-H-E-A-M-U-S, we've been taking him to this groomer forever. And I noticed a few months in a row where they were spelling his name wrong. And, you know, I'm not losing sleep over it. It's not the end of the world. But after like 3 months, I just kind of commented like, hey, just so you know, that's not how we spell his name. It's S-H-E-A-M-U-S. Some lady out of nowhere, I don't know who she is, was correcting me on the spelling of my dog's name. She, I'm sorry, that is not how you spell Seamus. And then she said some kind of fucking link. I was like, what the woman? Now that one, I could not keep my composure. I was like, lady, this is my dog. This is my dog. Like, shut up. What? As if to say that there's one way to spell a name in this world. Come on now. I am in my 50s and I am still like taken aback at how many ways people spell Allison. I got coffee the other day. They put my name on the cup, A-L-Y-C-I-N. I was like, oh, okay. Excuse me, can you take this cup back? Because my name isn't spelled properly. Anyway, people are just losing their shit. They're losing their shit. And I think about we're all going to lose our shit as a country if we don't continue to kind of learn how to tolerate one another and maintain composure and practice patience. I know I sound all cheesy. So look, now I'm being preachy. I'm not being preachy. I'm just saying we all have to kind of find that in ourselves, or like, we're going to lose it. We're going to freaking lose it. And we're all going to wind up like killing each other in this country. You know, I have worked in my career at several different Fortune 500 companies. And what I love about them most is that they're global, and you get to work with so many different people, cultures, backgrounds, perspectives, and it really does force you to practice tolerance and patience. It's also fascinating to kind of hear and learn from other people and what happens in their particular culture or country. But like, obviously in a country, you have like a team environment. And so your ultimate objective is to work together. So you have no choice but to find a way to work together. And again, I think that just helps you learn patience and tolerance, right? And work through conflict. But I'm not going to lie. I mean, I've had my fair share of frustrations because we speak different languages. Our native languages are different. We have thick accents. I'm told all the time I talk too fast and they don't understand me. We use phrases and words and stuff. Sometimes it can be frustrating. Sometimes it's funny. We crack up, but you work through it. Like just the other day, I was on a call and I said, are we going to leapfrog over this? And my colleague who's French, who lives in France, I could see his face on camera. And I was like, oh, do you not know that word? And he's like, what is this leapfrog? What is leapfrog? And I was like, oh, okay. I won't use leapfrog anymore. And then there's another guy who he has this tic where he says, right, so, righteso. And he says it like every other word in a sentence. But when he says it, it sounds like this, Rachel, Rachel. And I, for the longest time, was like, who is Rachel? What are you talking about, this Rachel person? I don't know anyone named Rachel. Who the hell is Rachel? Now, I didn't say that to him because I'm like, I have to be hearing him wrong.
Rachel.
And I eventually deduced that he was saying right so, and I was like, oh. So I tried my best not to flip out, but I was getting like really like, I was about to just one day go, who the freak is Rachel? Why do you keep talking about this Rachel person? But then it's, you know, there's a comedy aspect to it too, because then you can kind of take a step back and laugh, you know.
Rachel.
It makes me think of the hairless cat on Friends.
Rachel.
Anyway, but the best, my all-time favorite is this gentleman who, he has the biggest heart, a heart of gold. He's wicked smart. And he just wants everyone to like work well together and do the right thing. And, you know, inevitably in any company, you've got your douchey McDouchersons, right? You got douchebags everywhere. You can't avoid it, especially in big companies. And we were on a call and someone was behaving badly and just being a jerk. And we hang up. And this guy I'm friends with calls me direct afterwards because he was just so like upset. He couldn't fathom how someone could behave that way. And he said, he blew me out. He blew me out. And I was like, wait, what? He's like, he blew me out. And I said, are you trying to say he blew you away? Yes, he blew me out. I'm like, no, please stop saying blew me out. Don't say that. Don't say that. The phrase is he blew you away. And we just start cracking up. I have like a dictionary of things that he has said that just are so funny and we could laugh about it. But anyway, again, I think it just sort of hardens you when you work in environments like that 24/7. And so I guess, you know, ultimately you just kind of practice patience. But then there's the side of like learning from one another. And like culturally, my direct leader, he is a Scotsman who lives in Germany. And he was telling me a story the other day. And he starts off with, okay, well, in my village, and I was like, wait, your village? What century are we talking about? You live in a village? I immediately thought of like a Monty Python movie, like, bring out your dead. What, you live in a village? He's like, yeah, my village. So in my village, we have this, and he used this German phrase for it. I can't repeat it because I don't recall what it was. But he says, we have this thing where you can turn your house into a pub 4 months of the year. And I said, stop. Like, not 5 months, not 3 months, 4 months of the year, you can make your house a pub. And I said, wait, like a transactional, like money changes hands kind of pub? He said, yes. I was like, stop. I, like, what? governing body? Do you need a permit? Like, what governing body approves your house pub? Is it like the Knights of the Round Table in this village? Like, who approves your house pub? And he says, well, and this is the best part, you hang a broom over your door. It's like, what? Like a dustpan? Like a witch's broom? Like, what do you mean a broom? He's like, no, you hang a broom, and it's like a marker that tells the average Joe walking down the street that your house is a pub, and they could just come in and have a drink. So this is, I was fascinated by this conversation, and I could not at all for 1 second imagine this happening in America. I mean, it sounds nice, right? But like, I'm sorry, the home invasion statistic would spike in America if this happened. Like, just perfect strangers. Just, oh, look, there's a broom over their door. Let's go have a drink. I was like, this is crazy. It's freaking crazy. But it was, again, so fascinating. And I wish that we could do more things like that in life without fear. But all that to say, I think I have really appreciated and having the privilege of working at some of these big companies, because it really kind of cultures you in a sense, and learning from one another.
Rachel.
Now, all that said, I'm not going to paint this rosy picture. You know, working in these big companies, or I guess any company, every company has something. It's not all moonlight and roses, right? If you're at a company that you don't think that culturally it's the right fit for you, you got to get out. I know too many people that are afraid to leave. Maybe they've been at the company for like a lot of years or spans like the majority of their career, and they're kind of afraid to move on, but you got to bite the bullet. You got to move on because mentally it's just not healthy. I used to work at this construction firm. And when I say construction, it's like critical infrastructure construction, not like building a house. So it's, you know, power transmission, gas distribution, building 40 miles of pipeline through the mountains of West Virginia kind of construction. And let me tell you, culturally, as you can imagine, I mean, these individuals they grew up ditch diggers, you know, we call them the ditch diggers, and that's what they did their whole lives. And so, and it was like 100-year-old company, like family owned business. It was pretty decent size. It was a couple billion in revenue, but culturally, I was their highest ranking female for a while. Well, that's not entirely true. There was a woman who was general counsel. She wound up leaving, like quitting, because she felt like she was being discriminated against. Go figure. And so I ran all of technology and cybersecurity and some other things for this company. It was at times hard to stomach, I'll be honest. And so back to what I was saying about practicing patience, and you can listen, I'm not going to kid any of us. There's a threshold. Ultimately, we all have our boiling point or our threshold. And so there was some very lovely things about this company, but then there was also just things that they were kind of stuck in this sort of 1960s mentality that for me personally, I was like, okay, this is not a place I will thrive. I was there for a few years, but I have to face reality. This is not the kind of place that I'm going to retire from. And I tried hard. I tried hard to kind of shift some of the mindset and the culture. I think I made some small achievements in that regard, but it was really an uphill battle, and you just have to kind of remove yourself from the situation. So you can imagine if they were culturally stuck in the 1960s. Well, guess what? They were technically too. And so I had to kind of pull them into the current century. You know, no, you cannot have foreman 1234 as your password. Sorry. And the hate that ensued, like the hate that I got, you know, I had literally voicemails from foreman. Like, we have a help desk. We have all these outlets, right, to help you. And they would, no, I don't need to call the help desk. I'm going to call this woman and I'm going to leave a nasty gram for her making me change my password. Like, literally in deep Southern accents, because a lot of our pipeliner guys were in the South. And, you know, I'd get these, I'm trying to change my password. I got a password for you. Frick you. That was what I endured. It was fun. It took a lot of strength and perseverance to work there every day. Ultimately, I realized that it, again, was an uphill battle, and it, I was the one that was going to have to go. Our COO sat a few doors down from me, and we were both late. I was in the office late one night, and I think he and I were the only ones on the floor. And I noticed he kept walking to the printer on the floor, like passing my door. It struck me as odd a little bit because I know he has a printer in his office, but whatever. I just kept working. And then he stops in my doorway and he says, you know, ever since you got here, technology's gone down the pooper. And I was like, oh, really? Now, side note, by the way, I'm an executive and so is he. And this is the mindset of these individuals. Like, I have no qualms about bugging Allie because I can't print in my office when he's obviously able to print in another printer that was on the floor. But because he at 8 o'clock at night couldn't use his own printer, I'm going to bug Allie at this moment to figure it out. So that's just the mentality of these individuals. So anyway, you know, telling me that ever since I got there, technology's gone downhill. Okay, great. What's going on? Well, you guys pushed these patches to my computer and my printer's not working. And I said, okay, can I come take a look? We go in his office. I'm standing over him. He's banging on the computer like a freaking Neanderthal. And I look over at his printer and I pull out the drawer and I said, well, paper helps. It helps to have paper. And he just looked at me for a few seconds with a blank stare. And then he went, oh, you think I'm an idiot? And I said, I didn't say that. I didn't say that you're an idiot. I said, but I want you to do me a favor. I want you to remember this moment and think about this as the COO and set the right tone for this organization, because what just happened happens to my team several times a day, every year, right? So we're a small team at a relatively big company. We don't really have the resources we need, but we're doing our best and we do a lot of great things, but there's just people who don't know how to use technology. And rather than, and that's okay, we're here to help you, but rather than acknowledge that the problem is highly more likely you than us, like, take a moment and think about that. Because had I not been on this floor tonight, you would have went home thinking Allie sucks and she's tanked technology because you didn't have paper in your printer. So all that to say, that little example was just a microcosm of like things that I had to endure all the time. So as much as I've learned to practice, you know, patience and be tolerant and hold my composure, you know, in situations like that, it's a losing battle, right? Inevitably, you have to say, okay, enough. I got to do the right thing for me and move on. And I remember my CEO pulling me in his office for a couple hours one afternoon, like convincing me to stay. And I said, why would I stay? Right? Let's say this, if this was a relationship, and the guy that I was in a relationship with treated me nice sometimes. I mean, I think some women may stay in a relationship like that, but not this woman. It's all or nothing, right? So you either treat me with respect and treat me well always, or I'm out. So I moved on. The rest is history. So in summary, you know, there's some fantastic things, like some companies I've worked at, fantastic people, salt of the earth people. You learn so many cool things. You get to laugh at one another and some of our quirks, Rachel. But, you know, there's inevitably sometimes you're going to be at companies that, you know, culturally aren't the right fit for you. You gotta move on. It can be tough, especially if you've been entrenched in that world for too long. It can be unsettling and scary, but ultimately it's just the right thing to do for your mental health. But anyway, so let me bring all this to a close. I just hope that, you know, the election was a few weeks away. We've seen all kinds of crazy shit going on with cabinet selections. Oh my God, that's a whole nother topic and one I don't care to get into. My hope just for anyone that happens to be listening to this, all two people, that you continue to find joy in your life in whatever way, you know, whatever way that is. Admittedly, for me, it's been harder and harder as I've gotten older to kind of find joy in my life. I mean, I have a lot of positive, wonderful things in my life, especially my children, right? And things like that. I don't mean like that, but just those little moments of joy, just try to find them in your life and however they manifest. Like it could be a song you hear on Spotify, whatever you listen to. For me, and this is so silly, but we live in a neighborhood. We have so many different birds. I'm not a bird watcher, but my favorite bird is a bluebird. If you haven't seen a bluebird, Google it. They are so pretty. They are this vibrant, like powdery, like light blue. And they have these pink bellies. And they're just these beautiful birds. And they're a little elusive. They don't really show themselves a lot. But they live in the Northeast, and I guess other areas as well. But in my neighborhood, they exist, but you got to look for them. And every once in a while, one just shows up in my backyard. And for me, the bluebird is a sign of happiness. It's like a symbol. And so when I see it, if I see one, it brings me joy. And I think like, oh, okay, it's a sign. It's going to be a good day. It sounds so stupid and cheesy, I know. But for me, it's just like, look for those little moments of joy. I hope you all find it. It's going to be tough the next few years, I'm sure, for many people. I just hope we continue to find ways to just tolerate one another and, again, find those moments of joy. So anyway, let's bring this to a close. So thank you for listening, if you happen to stay the whole time, for the second ever episode of Chattitude. And I look forward to hanging out with you next time. Thank you.